Hello again from Holden Village, high in the Cascade Mountains. Today is July 5th, 1997, and the teaching session that we're about to hear is Hospitality in Church Culture Today, and the presenter is Dorothy Bass Schwain.
You may roll the tape. Hi, my name is Dorothy Bass Schwain, and this session is called Hospitality in Church and Culture Today. And hospitality is something I wanted to focus on in one of these sessions because, in a sense, it is the practical activity in the doing of which we embody the reality that we are no longer strangers. It's the practical activity in which that overcoming of strangerhood is done. And it is done, I think, in response to God's hospitality first to us. So today I wanted to talk about the grounding of this practice of hospitality in our faith, and to talk about how it works itself out in very practical ways and fails to work itself out sometime through inhospitality in our culture. It seems to me our culture is having a crisis, we might call it a crisis in hospitality, in the practice of hospitality, both in the everyday level of fragmented mealtimes and everyone scurrying about and not being able to welcome family even, and in the much larger social issues of homelessness, immigration, and so on. So I want to look at the grounding of this practice in our faith and some of the problems it's having today, and also some of what we can do to build one another up in a way of life that can sustain us as hospitable people. Now, let me start with a couple of examples, which I am recalling from stories told at a dinner party recently in Valparaiso. A rabbi had been to speak, and so some of us were talking with him at dinner after after his lecture. And a man who was a Catholic priest who was at the table spoke up and told a story like this, that he had arrived probably 20 years ago in Israel late on a Friday afternoon. And basically, public transportation and many other things shut down in Israel on Friday afternoon for the Sabbath, which you can really perceive in that place. And he got the bus to so far, but then was let off. There was no more public transportation. And he had to walk another 12 miles to where he was going, where people were going to receive him. He hadn't planned it this way, but the plane was late. And a family saw him going by and said, "Won't you come in and stay with us? It's Shabbat, and moreover, our son is being bar mitzvah tomorrow. We need to have a guest. We need to have a guest. It would be a mitzvah for us to have a guest." So he went in and went to the bar mitzvah and received this hospitality, and then they all had a wonderful time. The next evening, the buses started running again. He got on his bus and went on his way. Well, he told this story, and then another man at our table, who happened to be Jewish, said, "Well, you know, that reminds me of a story from my own life. After college, I was hitchhiking my way through Europe and was in Spain. And it was late at night, and the train, the place where I was going, and the train pulled in, and I got off the train, but the whole village was asleep. And it was kind of scary because I was a long-haired college American. And got off the train and saw just one light over in the distance, and it turned out to be," he went towards the light, "and turned out to be a monastery. And he knocked on the door. They said, 'Oh, come in. Have you eaten? Won't you have something to eat? Here's a bed for you.'" And the next morning he got up and went on his way, and found that the monks had slipped some coins into his pocket while he was sleeping, mm-hmm, as part of their hospitality. Mm-hmm. Now, these are two examples of hospitality. And it seems to me that our society today would look at these examples and might call them Random Acts of Kindness. Okay, Random Acts of Kindness. Isn't this wonderful? But these aren't random acts of kindness. They aren't random at all. The people who saw those strangers and invited them in had been practicing for this opportunity for their whole lives. Right? They were grounded in a way of life that has ancient roots in each case, that the communities to which they belong, these Benedictines or these observant Jews, the communities to which they belonged had been teaching one another for centuries that one ought to offer hospitality, and here's how you do it. Right? So they kept their furniture in a certain place, right? And they had a certain kind of readiness available in terms of food. They used their time in a certain way, right? They knew what to say. They knew how to reach out their hands. There are skills. There are spaces in life that have been kept open for this practice of hospitality. It wasn't random at all. They had been practicing for a long time. And that kind of a way of life can sustain not only radical acts of hospitality, such as taking in the young man, but there's also a different kind of hospitality, hospitality to the estranged within our own circle. You know, the mother-in-law with whom we are at odds, the friend, the broken relationship. Strangers come in different varieties. Some of them are from different groups, and we fear them because they're unknown. Some of them we know all too well. So what does it mean to practice hospitality and have a way of life that can ground us in hospitality? Now, it seems to me that hospitality is one of the most fundamental human needs. Now, that's brains for just a minute. I mean, we all, since nobody lives at Holden forever, I know that we all have traveled. Mm-hmm. We've done so by choice. But many, many people in our world find themselves traveling not by choice, refugees. And really, human experience and history would suggest that this could happen to any of us in spite of our sense of security, our sense that we have a comfortable home to go home to, whatever, that we could be cast upon the face of the earth as wanderers, quite apart from our control or expectation, by war, by disaster, by loss. It's part of the human condition. It's a fundamental human need to be taken in when we are cast upon the face of the earth. And the depth of this shows up in some of the rich myths and stories of our, well, of all cultures. I think of Hansel and Gretel. Okay? There are lots of fairy tales, Goldilocks, you know, which is kind of a tale of hospitality gone awry or taken advantage of. Right? The Odyssey, where Odysseus, do you know this story? You know, it takes 20 years to get home from the Trojan War, and he has to look for places to stay along the way. And in some places, the hosts want to eat you. You know, other places, the hosts want to absorb you and keep you forever. You know, some of the goddesses who want to entice him to stay there. So hospitality is something that people fundamentally and deeply need, and it's very... very long in human experience. But it's also not always there. It's not always there. And there are many people who die for the lack of it. And so perhaps the fear of the stranger is as constant in our humanness as our need for hospitality. And so it seems to me that unless we find ways of life in which we can support and sustain one another in this offering of hospitality, it's not something always that one person can do or should do alone, but how do we do this together as community, embody and enact a way of life that can receive strangers in their need and the estranged? And it seems to me that the Christian community and the Bible and the congregations in which we worship possess living wisdom and experience in this practice of hospitality. which we as Christians need to become very articulate about and aware of and good at doing. There's a skill here in this practice. We need to become aware of this practice and articulate about it and good at doing it. But the world also needs it. The whole world needs it, and it's a gift, in fact, that I think we can offer, not only as the givers of hospitality, but as models for hospitality for the world. So what I want to do in the session is to consider some of these basic biblical and theological groundings of this practice of hospitality, which is very rich and lots of wrinkles in the biblical theology of hospitality, which are very interesting, and then consider how we're doing with this as a culture and as a church, how hospitality happens at home, at Holden, in society, and in the church, and then talk about how we can build ourselves up in this way of life that can be sustained in that way. Okay. Now, first, a little bit of wordplay. Our word hospitality comes from a Latin word, hospitare, which basically means to guest, or it could mean to be a guest or to receive a guest. So there's a reciprocity built into the whole idea. To be a guest, to receive a guest. It's hospitality. The same verb means both of those things. Okay? Which is interesting because, in a sense, we're all strangers and we become guests relationally.
Sometimes we're guests, sometimes we're strangers. Or sometimes we're...
Sometimes we're the guest, sometimes we're the host, but it's the overcoming of the strangeness that is at the root of this verb, right? Okay? And, even more interesting, in Greek, there's a word for... which is the word in No Longer Strangers, xenos. It's a noun, which is the phrase No Longer Strangers. That noun can mean guest, it can mean host, it can mean stranger. Okay? So there's a reciprocity about the whole notion of being guest and being host, which is built right into the language. Let's play with this a minute. Xenos, the New Testament word for hospitality is, well, let me try this. Can you think of an English word which uses that root?
Xenophobia.
Xenophobia. Do you know this word? Xenophobia. Fear of strangers, okay? Fear of strangers, xenophobia. Often used in relation to nationalistic movements that are very hateful against, say, immigrants or so on. Yes?
Well, it just makes me think, didn't you just say that xenos also could mean guest?
Yeah. But here's this is an English word, okay? A New Testament word is... philoxenia, okay? Love of the guest, the stranger. And love of the whole idea of hospitality. Okay, enjoyment, celebration in guesting and hosting. Philoxenia. So what we're talking about is what would it mean to become philoxenic people? And it seems to me that that is a question which has a material, there's an economic reality to it. What would it mean to become able to be hospitable, share our food, share our homes, whatever? But there's also a spiritual dimension. What kind of person is it that can really welcome the stranger in a...
person that runs a bed and breakfast place.
Right, and what are some of the dynamics in that? I mean, you're taking in people whom you don't know and letting them sleep in an unlocked room next to yours.
Yeah.
Right? This is, and some people have this almost as a gift. I think it is an ideal of Christian life that we should all develop this and grow towards it. But again, I think as a shared communal practice as much as an individual one. Now, let's keep developing a biblical portrait of hospitality. I have some Bibles around with individual verses that will just, if we have a little, we'll have a little collage. Would anybody be willing to read just a verse? And we'll just take them in any old order. There are about six of them. And you can find your verse, and when you're ready, we'll just hear a quilt of images, biblical images of hospitality.
Deuteronomy 10, 17 to 19. You shall also love the stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. You shall fear the Lord your God. Him alone you shall worship. To him you shall hold fast. Well, that's too far.
For you were strangers.
For the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great God, mighty and awesome, who is not partial and takes no bribe, who executes justice for the orphan and the widow, and who loves the strangers, providing them food and clothing. You shall also love the stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Sorry about that.
Mm-hmm. God loves strangers. Mm-hmm. You were strangers.
Then the king will say to those at his right hand, come you that are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. Matthew 25.
Where was that?
Matthew 25, 34.
Thanks.
Hebrews 13, 1 and 2. Let mutual love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing that, some have entertained angels without knowing it.
Who entertained angels without knowing it? What's the reference in that story?
Abraham.
We remember that story from Genesis, I think it's 18. Where three men come to the tent. For Abraham is camped in the midst of his journey. And what does Abraham do?
Provides a meal for him.
Mm-hmm. Provides a meal, I think, kills a calf or something to feed them, mm-hmm. right? Does he know who they are, what they're doing mm-hmm. there? No, it's important that he's done that before he knows who they are even. Mm-hmm. Does it because they need it, they're strangers, they've been traveling. And they, what do they do? What did they tell him after the feast?
Sarah will bear a child.
Right. Sarah will bear a child. Strangers carry surprises. Mm-hmm. Okay. Strangers carry surprises. That's part of what happens with strangers in the Bible. Okay, there's some other verses.
Leviticus 19, 33 and 34. When an alien resides with you in your land, you shall not oppress the alien. The alien who resides with you shall be to you as a citizen among you. You shall love the alien as yourself. For you were aliens in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God.
Okay. For you were aliens. Yes, yours is similar.
Saying, yeah, Exodus 23:9. You shall not oppress a resident alien. You know the heart of an alien, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt.
Mm-hmm. All of these verses from law, from Torah, are there others from Leviticus to Deuteronomy here, or Exodus? No. What's the story behind them? You were strangers in the land of Egypt?
Yeah.
Okay. That, speaking to a people, Hebrew people, you were strangers in the land of Egypt, and now you are a chosen people, and you are wandering in the wilderness, and this is how your community life will be. That's what we're getting in the law. Leviticus and Deuteronomy. This is how your community life will be. And it will be to show the kind of hospitality to others that you have received. So in a sense, there's a. Can we imagine ourselves as people who are able to choose to travel? As people who cannot choose to travel, but who are cast out as refugees? Or taken somewhere in bondage. Can we imagine that?
Yeah.
Okay. It's woven deeply into the Hebrew people's sense of themselves. And these are just a few of the many, many passages that say the same thing over and over. It's woven deeply into the sense of themselves that the chosen people are given in their sacred texts.
Well, excuse me, weren't the Hebrew peoples, they weren't really treated well in Egypt. You mentioned, I was thinking that it wasn't really that they should show the same kind of hospitality they were shown to Egypt, that they should sympathize with them.
Okay, good. No, that's good. That's helpful.
They were rather enslaved.
Right. Sympathize. But then they have received help from God.
Yeah.
In the subsequent period. So they know themselves both as, they should have compassion for those who were in that situation. They also know themselves as having received God's hospitality, right, or God's help in their strangeness, in their need. They received God's help, and thus they can, because they have known hospitality, they can think, share it with others.
Uh-huh. In Egypt, they were enslaved by powers, right. But their neighbors, they were friendly with neighbors, because it says later on when they left, they were their neighbors shared jewelry and things with them as gifts, and they took them along. Yeah. So I think, as usually or oftentimes, you know, we're comfortable with our neighbors, but then governments or whoever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's compassion and there's mutuality both in these texts. Are there any others out there?
Yeah, Romans 12:13, contribute to the needs of the saints, extend hospitality to strangers.
Okay. Romans. Now think about the early church, the house churches. Okay. There's hospitality both to the saints and to strangers. Okay. And that the whole project of the early church, in a sense, is receiving one another into table fellowship. And helping that circle to grow, that circle of fellowship to grow beyond strangerhood.
It's interesting that text from Romans says extend hospitality. There's something about not just, you know, how do you do, but a kind of real effort. It goes into the word extend in my mind. That it's, that it's not a hollow thing, that it has some content to it.
Right, right. It also reminds me of Michael Peltz used the word extend in one of your sessions earlier this week. That we're not diverting something that we need to someone else, and therefore we won't have it, but we'll just let more people in on the good that we have. Right? Stretch it.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Other responses to those texts? Things that make you think of?
Jesus was always doing this with strangers.
Okay, let's tell some stories also about hospitality, Bible stories talking about.
Taking in while he was constantly being accused of entertaining wine bibbers and the lower castes of society.
Right, right. Okay. Other images?
Oh, sure, feeding of 5,000.
Okay.
That's extending.
That's really extending.
More.
He
also showed how to be a guest and receive the hospitality so many times, which for many people isn't easy. They'd rather be the giver.
Right, right. Can you give an example of that from a story about him?
Zacchaeus? He sort of invited himself to Zacchaeus' house, didn't he?
Yeah, he gave Zacchaeus the gift of being a host.
Right.
Which Zacchaeus thought he wasn't worthy of.
Or on the road to Emmaus, people there who said, come in and eat.
Stay with us now, for it is evening and the day is almost over. And there's another case of, but then who actually breaks the...
Right, then he became, that was the switch, because he became the host.
He becomes the host. He enters as guest. He becomes the host. He breaks the bread. He also demonstrates this the point that's throughout biblical stories of hospitality that strangers bring surprises, mm-hmm. you know, bring gifts.
And that's the Samaritan woman.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he brings her a great gift, finally.
Uh-huh, right. By her sharing.
I mean, yeah, there's a sense in which there's, she's not too sure she wants to help him.
Uh-huh.
Or she becomes engaged in this conversation, then it becomes more and more of a connection.
Right, right.
And then finally he's there for everyone through her.
Yeah. The wedding at Cana is another interesting example where Jesus comes as guest and in a sense becomes a host providing the wine.
Yeah.
Now think about this sense of role switching. Of being guest and host. Do you have any experiences of where guesting becomes hosting and hosting becomes guesting, where you enter somewhere as guest and you realize then that you become a host to others? Or where you're the host and you realize then that you have become the guest of those gathered at your table? Does that ring any?
I think that speaks to Holden in many ways.
Uh-huh.
When I first came here, I was a guest, but then the days I was encouraged to be greeting other people, so suddenly I was a host.
Uh-huh.
So that
uh-huh.
was an interesting experience.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
It's nothing profound, but uh-huh. we occasionally have people come visit us, so we're sort of a host, and now all of a sudden they'll bring food and wine to the house, and they're hosting us in ways, or they'll take us out or something like that.
Uh-huh.
But people often try to do that.
Yeah, it seems like when a child is born, my mother was a guest. Boy, she surely turned
right.
into a host.
Right.
You know?
Right. 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 In a sense, think about Holden as an example, as Tim just did. In a sense, almost every time you sit down at one of those tables in the dining hall, if you don't know the people at the table, there's some guesting and hosting that goes on. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little ritual to it. You know, how long will you be here? Where are you from?
What's your sign?
you know, and have you been here before? And it can seem, I mean, it is a ritual, and sometimes maybe it can seem trite, but it is a genuine opportunity to connect, which sometimes really goes somewhere. But we all get practice in being guests and hosts and overcoming strangeness in those exchanges, which I think is good practice given the isolation that exists many times out in the world. It's practice in things that come harder and harder to people, I think, these days. Yeah.
We've been coming to Holden since, I think, 1968, mm-hmm. and learned gradually the gift of hospitality through Holden's hospitality. And we have visited with people we've met here, and
uh-huh.
we've tried to tell our kids that anyone is welcome at home when they were living at home. And so one time at Holden, they got acquainted with some people, a youth group from Arizona. And so one of our sons said, "Mom, you said anyone was welcome at our house, and we have someone we'd like to bring home just for the night after we leave Holden." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Sure."
Mm-hmm.
There were 19 of them. And we, it was the whole youth group. The pastor and his
uh-huh.
wife and Moses and Noah were about this big. And we had a wonderful day. It was the bicentennial 4th of July.
Night.
Oh, it was. You know, it was just wall-to-wall people. But they were camping their way down the coast.
Uh-huh.
And it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. But had we not been to Holden many years before that and, you know,
mm-hmm.
felt comfortable doing this,
mm-hmm.
it was a gift.
Yeah. One thing that has struck me, too, is how the bus arrives right before a meal.
Yeah.
So the first thing we do is say, "Won't you come and eat with us?" You know, which is almost a universal gesture of hospitality across cultures. So, the other examples you want to offer that seem in sync with these biblical themes?
Well,
like to maybe just comment a little more on the Samaritan woman's story and that idea of extending ourselves. Because I imagine that when Jesus first tried to strike up a conversation with her, she wasn't all that interested, or probably kind of thinking like, you know, don't talk to me. And it could have just been left at that, but Jesus extended himself more and asked a few more questions. Mm-hmm. Just as we sit at the table, and if we only ask, well, where do you come from, how long are you going to be here, great, pass the butter.
Uh-huh.
You know, if we, it's that effort in hospitality, extending ourselves a little more, finding interest, and suddenly, mm-hmm. then it opens up.
Mm-hmm.
You find connections, and you receive, and you give gifts. And
uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, I think that's a good example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking that in the ancient world, if you read either the Odyssey or mm-hmm. any of the Greek mm-hmm. kinds of things, that gifts are also a very great part of hospitality. So that the monastery that mm-hmm. that put coins,
mm-hmm.
hopefully they were telephone or something, you know, coins.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something about that can be viewed almost like, here's the obligation for hospitality, and then it gets extended even more because it's to be gifts as well. But I don't hear that talked about. In fact, it just occurred to me that they did a redo of Ulysses recently for television.
Right.
And I sort of had it on just to see what they would do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember anything about gifts being given along the way. Maybe I didn't see the whole thing, but that's a very big thing when you read it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Doesn't danger and escape of danger is more the point of
right
of TV.
Right. Well, the suitors in Odysseus are back there in Ithaca,
yeah.
abusing hospitality.
Yeah,
they're showing how
yeah.
not to be guests. They don't bring gifts.
Yeah.
They eat up everything. They make a mess. Which is not, which means that there are some, in a sense, rules
mm-hmm. yeah.
about hospitality. No, and Miss Manners mediates some of those rules in our society, right? Or Emily Post before her. So there might be some real long ancient wisdom involved in some of those rules. We see them in literary texts. Henry Nouwen, who's a great writer, Christian writer, who died a few months ago, says that one of the classic movements of the spiritual life is the movement from hostility to hospitality. Mm-hmm. And he talks about hospitality as creating space for others, but also suggests the quality of that space. That you know, we don't walk into the master bedroom and say, "I'll take this one." You know that there are relational, there's practical wisdom about what makes for good guesting and hosting, which our communities bear. Another one of the things that he says, which I really like, is an empty house is not a hospitable house. In other words, you can be yourself when you have a guest. You don't have to let the guest trample all over. When we go as a guest, Jonathan, maybe you could speak about this. When you're in another culture, you try to adopt the meal times and the patterns of life that exist there. We don't go receiving guests, and being a guest doesn't mean trampling over the host. Okay? There's a certain mutual respect which prevails. And many churches now, which are hosting shelters or meals, and perhaps some of you have been involved in this, develop a practical wisdom in ways of trying to make the help as helpful as possible, you know, and certain boundaries too, which I think also happens at Holden and what we expect of one another. Any comments on any of this, on what kinds of practical wisdom or experience might help hospitality to happen? Yeah, Jonathan?
Not exactly on your question, but Mother Teresa has always said that the biggest problem in the world is not poverty, it's loneliness.
Uh-huh.
And hospitality is obviously the one of the main answers, or the opening for an answer to loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
The other day I was at Narnia talking with the kids, and I had a little story from India about some Dalits, some outcasts, what they used to call untouchables, who lived in little houses outside the wall, and other castes who lived in big houses inside the wall. And this was a rather, there are a lot of hormones in that room, you know, a lot of movement and television language coming out of the people. But I said, would you rather have, we were talking about the two houses, I said, would you rather have a big house that was empty, or a little house that was full of friends?
Uh-huh.
And to a person, every child said, a little house full of friends.
Uh-huh.
You know? Affirmation of hospitality over against some of the models that we face a lot.
Right. That's helpful, huh?
Well, I just thought of this. I'm thinking a lot of times of gatherings, you know, in real life outside of Holden, that a lot of times corporate sponsors are sought, and you'll see big signs with Pepsi Cola and Nike and, you know, all these big sponsors who have a lot of money. But I think when we share our faith and our, you know, invite people to come into our church and into our faith life, we are the sponsors, and it doesn't come from outside of ourselves. And I think that's a really huge difference when we are the source of our of what we're offering, rather than to ask someone else to pay for it and bring it in. Like, we don't quite have enough ourselves, so we have to go to an outside source and bring it in.
Interesting. Go ahead.
Another opportunity to be hosting is through the many exchange programs, to actually have someone from another country who wants to come here. I know we've been so blessed by having exchange students and learning about those cultures, and then also having an opportunity to go visit.
Has anyone else done that or been involved in that as a student or as a host? You have to.
I think, you know, this just really struck me. You can be a host just even in simple things. Like, there's a couple little boys in our neighborhood whose homes are not as stable as ours. And that can be a challenge for me to know, you know, where to draw the line, because I can see where I could just about, you know, raise these kids, or, you know, have them spend an awful lot of time. But that's kind of become something that's been happening more in our household, is because these boys, you know, they also gravitate, I think, towards more stable places where they can get some attention and someone has something to give.
There's an interesting image there. Thank you very much. But stable places where people can get some attention and where people have something to give, as an image of hospitality. One of the things that the church can and should be, one of the things that Holden Village can and should be in a different kind of way. Thanks. Yeah, Peter, go ahead.
I've just been sitting here thinking that our hotel and motel industry is probably not helping the culture of hospitality in the country and the world.
Okay, the hospitality industry, you mean?
Yeah.
The hospitality industry, that's what it's called.
It is called that.
It
grew out of, no doubt, a good system where you knew the innkeeper when you went to the inn, or you got to know him. When I was a kid, it goes back now, we would travel across the country and we'd often stay in what they call tourist homes, I guess, where it was basically a bedroom in somebody's house. I guess it would go across the country, but when we travel, you get to know somebody.
Hospitality industry is really interesting, and in how it is changing the expectations of travelers, including the expectations of people who come to Holden. For what will be available and how we will be treated. Okay. I don't know if it's still said this year. I don't go to the orientation anymore after being here. But, you know, this is not a resort. It's a community. Is that part of the orientation? This is not a resort. It's a community. And there is a big difference when you, and I imagine that some people arrive and find that they have to make their own beds and are surprised. You know, but it's a... And yet I think that the quality of hospitality here is something that people care very much about, but it's not in keeping with the hospitality industry and the expectations that grow up in North American people as a result of doing that kind of traveling.
I think when you go to and travel and stay at a hotel, it's really cold and impersonal. Go stay at a Marriott or something like that. You get a room and a TV.
It's utilitarian, but it doesn't have to do with overcoming loneliness or with these other, you know, as I looked out, I'm looking at my sheet of biblical stories on hospitality. There's one that we left out that I do want to touch on. But first, let me summarize what I see as some of the themes in our tradition about hospitality, which we have been talking about. One of those, mutuality. Guests become hosts, hosts become guests. I've heard many people who work in soup kitchens and places like this say, you know, I feel that really I get as much by being there as I am given to the people. I think many of us have had that kind of experience. The idea that guests bring surprises, carry surprises, strangers bring surprises. Abraham's guests are a good example, there are lots of others. That we should be able to know ourselves as having been strangers and having been aliens, okay, as the Hebrew people did. And that we can know ourselves as having been welcomed. As Christians, I think that would mean welcomed into Christ's family through baptism. And we're celebrating that every week in Eucharist. What about the one story I thought would come right to mind, the one I'm interested in, is...
perfume.
Mm?
The oil of nard.
Well, that's a good one, too.
I was thinking of just the other day we read the story.
Okay. I'll hold off on mine.
There's a woman that comes to Jesus for healing for her daughter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we have this little argument about the crumbs being given to the dogs.
Right.
I mean, I struggle with that story because I think that it may be an example of how this woman... I mean, it really changed Jesus' mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of times it's interpreted as, well, Jesus was just testing her.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think maybe she. I think maybe she stuck it to him.
Maybe we can do that to Mark's Jesus and not to somebody.
Yeah.
You agree?
One of the Bible stories about hospitality that still totally freaks me out is, I think his name is Lot. It's the Sodom story. Two angels come to town. He's standing around near the town gates. He sees the two angels who come in the guise of two men. And he insists, he rather forcibly insists that they come. He turns them aside. He insists that they come to his house, and he's hospitable to them. They stay overnight. During the night, strangers or neighbors, the community, comes beating on his door, wanting to have their way with these two angel men. And he says, on my honor, I pledged my safety and security and food. And he prepares, it says he prepared a banquet for them. No, you can't have these men and have your way with them. And I think the implication is that they wanted to sexually have their way with them.
Mm-hmm.
Then he says, but here, take my two daughters.
Right. Yeah.
You can do what you want with them. And then fortunately, the two angels blind the crowd, the community that wants to do this, and so they cannot find the door, and they pull Lot away from the door. But he has this whole honor thing about the whole reason to do this is that he can't let his guests be harmed. It troubles me.
Yes.
And then he goes on to demonstrate how increasingly goofy he is by the two angels the next morning saying, you've got to leave because this town is going to be destroyed. He whines and says, no, I don't want to leave. Finally, they say, you really have to leave. We insist. They take him by the hand and make him leave. Then he begs. He doesn't want to go in the country. He wants to go to another town. So finally they say, all right, you can go to another town. And then... he stays in a cave, and in two subsequent nights, his daughters
These daughters are just willing to throw to the dogs.
Get
him drunk and have sex with him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a
pretty dysfunctional family. Very dysfunctional.
And there's not all this. His wife dies.
Yeah. Right. For, in a sense, for having some nostalgia about her place of
and curiosity.
Where she has had her life.
Because yeah. She wants to be a witness.
Yeah.
A testimony.
That's right. Right. Lots of disordered hospitality there, I think. Well, the story that I wanted to just mention is Luke 2.
Oh. Yeah.
The no room at the inn.
A stable place.
The stable place, right? The where I think all of these themes come to a head, in a sense, around the identification with the one who is a stranger and who's in need of a place to stay. The extension of minimal but acceptable hospitality in the stable, and in then this little family in the stable becoming the host of these crowds of shepherds who come to visit, and being a surprise. And it's interesting, do you know the ritual Las Posadas, the celebration of Las Posadas, which the Hispanic community does? In the days before, the last days of Advent, the days leading up to Christmas Eve, out in the streets sometimes, you know, in a procession, knocking on doors and being turned away. Mary, someone place Joseph. Won't you take us in? And the innkeeper says, no, you might be a vagabond, I can't take you in. You're no good, I can't take you in. And then finally, finding a place in the stable, and the celebration happens. And it's very interesting to think of that celebration taking place in Hispanic communities, which it does, where the people acting out the story are themselves recently, you know, may themselves be aliens in a very technical sense, and are in a sense teaching themselves to receive one another, to receive new aliens through the enactment of this ritual. And in fact, homelessness is much lower in that community than in any other community because people do take one another in. And there's this constant reminder of that story of hospitality and need which exists there. Any comments on any of that?
A thought that came to my mind is I think that we try to find some comfort in the systems that we've developed that are supposed to take care of people like that so that we don't have to be bothered. Isn't that why we're paying taxes? So that there's a shelter somewhere to take care of these folks don't come to my door.
Right.
Not saying that there's a lot of wonderful service that goes on as a result of that, but not if it's so that it can be someplace else and not around my house.
Yeah. What about just in there's this happens, it seems to me, at so many different levels in our homes, at Holden, in our congregations, in society. Even just taking the simple level of home, you've given some good examples of your own hospitality. I know in my own life that hospitality can become a tool or almost a weapon. You know, I mean, you can entertain grandly in order to get people in the community on your side, you know, or to get, you know, if some people move into town, you can kind of get them on your team before they get on another team, this kind of thing. Or you can have a party where the newcomers in town can disclose their gifts. Okay. I mean, hospitality can become competitive, it seems to me, in middle class life. In a Martha Stewart kind of sense, okay? And sometimes, in fact, we don't take people in or don't have people over because it has to be done grandly, it has to be done in a certain kind of way. People, and it really doesn't, it really doesn't.
Some people think it has to be done grandly.
Right, right.
I think there's a real difference and it kind of pushes my buttons when people say, they're entertaining. Like, come on, I don't entertain. I have people over, whatever. It's just, you can get really carried away and
make things a lot more difficult than they need to be. To me, entertaining means having people over who I'm not really comfortable with, or who I think I have to impress.
What are the characteristics of a hospitable space?
Space?
Or a hospitable table, hospitable... how do you know hospitality when you see it? I mean, what's the difference between that kind of hospitality industry, entertainment, and so on? How do you know it in your own life?
There's a few things out of place. No, I'm not afraid to sit down or pick up a magazine because it's not just so. Mm-hmm. You know, so that it looks lived in. It looks like walking.
In my little mind, it's almost impossible to really feel the full taste of hospitality if the food is sort of prepackaged, pre-cooked, catered or something. I mean, I'm sort of sorry to say that, but it's so bad that in some homes, some relatives of mine, they never sit down to a meal, and they never cook. And the sense of hospitality is very hard to find in that house. It's almost like staying in a motel. And I'm wondering if hospitality doesn't include some kind of investment of your own personality, in as much as you choose something to cook, or you give it some personal touch, as well as some sacrifice.
How do you?
I'm raising it for that.
Any women who'd like to resonate with me?
I say that as a cook, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm talking as a cook.
I would entertain a lot less if I had to cook all the food. I get food from local restaurants and love having guests in their house. I can have them frequently, but if I had to cook all the food, I wouldn't do it so often.
I think there's a comfort.
Can I come sometimes?
That's good. You can choose your ethnicity. You can have Thai, Ethiopian, Middle Eastern.
Ruth?
A comfort level. And you have to feel whether somebody's brought in takeout or whatever, or has actually cooked the food. It's the comfort level and the feeling of being welcome. I've been at people's houses where I just don't feel comfortable, and that's not hospitality. There, you have to feel comfortable. Both. You have to feel welcome, and the person has to make you feel welcome.
Well, A, that you're not a big burden.
Yeah.
And probably B, that you're not somehow obligated to return all of this and then some. I mean, the there's no competition involved, and feeling burdened.
But the mutuality exists, but not as a law.
Yeah.
But because of the enjoyment of one another.
I think having in mind the needs of the guest. I mean, we sometimes have people in who have dietary needs, and I feel, you know, not to make a big thing out of it, but to make sure that there's something there that they're comfortable with eating.
Did you want to say something? Oh, that's fine.
I think to put the TV in the shower.
Turn it on.
Yeah. If I enter into a space to sort of sit and chat and the TV's on, I can't do it.
So the sense of, I hear again the stable place where their attention is given. Mm-hmm. The attention is given. And stability too, it might be a certain kind of, the food is ready, you know, we're not screwing it up. Yeah. Attention is important.
Last Christmas, we had our whole family there over Christmas. There were 27 people for a turkey dinner, and there was no electricity. And it was a real challenge. But the TV didn't work, and so everybody worked together to help prepare the meal. And our neighbors about two blocks down, I could see lights on them. So I called them up, and I said, we have a turkey. could we use your oven? And they said, sure, we have gas, and you can, but the oven didn't work. And I invited them to come, but no, they said they didn't want to come to the dinner, but and they didn't want to even have some at their house, but they were very willingly. So the turkey went to, down there by sled, because we had 2 feet of snow and no electricity. Uh-huh. But it was the most wonderful, relaxing Christmas, because we all, we played games, we talked, and we didn't have to worry about games and whatever was
going on. Right. Surprises.
Yeah,
again,
it was great.
Being a source of hospitality.
Are you going to steer us toward talking about our society's hospitality? You were just talking about that.
Well, we're almost out of time, but
every day, you know, every time we come here, one of the images I remember is on that shortcut we take up from, I don't remember, Highway 97, maybe, and cut up the hill and go past this, it's probably an orchard right off Lake Antioch. There's a migrant farm worker housing there. Mm-hmm. And for years it's been living there. This year it seems to be boarded up. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you all see that or not.
Yeah.
But, every year I see it, it reminds me of all the migrant workers we have, and aliens coming into the country to work and just barely scratch out a living for them and their families far away. And how this country isn't trying to be hospitable as it was for our, I'm sure almost all of our forebears, forefathers and foremothers. You know, I don't know if they were going to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've said it. I hope. I mean, I do think that these, that the biblical themes that I was trying to lift up here are very much apropos to the condition that you're, xenophobia compared to philoxenia. And this works out in referenda in California and in legislative and other policy making venues in every situation, in every locale that we're from, I'm sure, one way or another.
We can get into trouble if you, I mean, you really can get into trouble if you are hospitable to strangers who are really strange. I mean, I live fairly close to a row of restaurants and nightclubs on Santa Monica Boulevard, and some of them park out in the street outside of my house. And one Saturday night, this woman knocked at my door, and she was sort of heavy metal, her car wouldn't start, and she wanted to use the phone. Well, you think, well, is there somebody hiding around the bush? You know, so anyway, I finally let her in, and she used the phone to call somebody for help. And of course, what was I doing? I was writing a sermon. So she saw that I had Bible text out, a bunch of stuff that I was using, and she said, I realized that she's stoned. And she said, what do you do? I said I was a pastor, I was writing a sermon, and she immediately started to confess. So I don't think you should confess to me, go to your priest. But I got her out. But I mean, sometimes it can be really scary when you... When you try to be careful, and you don't let in people who are, I was probably pushing the margins of safety there. She did seem to be appear to be alone, and her car was right outside my house. So
right.
But I mean, it can get you into weird things.
Right. And that, if we're out of time, let me use that as a hook to close. I think that that's one reason we need to think about grounding our practice of hospitality in a way of life that we share with other people in community. And when I talk about hospitality, I'm not just talking about it as a virtue or as a good feeling, but rather as a communal practice of the church. Which is one, and of our of Christian people, as one of the things that historically, whether as monks and nuns or as Catholic workers with houses of hospitality or whatever, but historically something that we have done together over time, responding to fundamental human needs, in the light of and in response to God's activity in the world, as it's been given us to understand in our baptism and in the gospel. So it's as a shared practice and not just as a good feeling that we need to think about this. And, you know, that's it's in that spirit, I think, that we need to see it. I think that Holden thinks about it that way because there's a community which needs, okay, what do we do with these guests? You know, what do we do with new volunteer staff? What do we do with people who come? And also extending it through mission giving and so on in this community. But it's as a shared practice, not just as an individual thing, that we need to think about this.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I want to hear for future ones, but future discussion of this, but an issue for me has always been, especially living in the middle of an urban center, mm-hmm. my children have always pressured me to take in homeless mm-hmm. families. Mm-hmm. We see homeless mm-hmm. children on the street, they know homeless mm-hmm. kids, we've had homeless teens around the house a lot. And I always deal with the question of burnout. Mm-hmm. And for them, it's a natural, spontaneous uh-huh. thing. And I can remember Marcus at age 4 or something saying, Mommy, they really would like living in our basement better than on the street. Mm-hmm. There's a bathroom down there. Mommy, there are mattresses that people leave in the alley. We mm-hmm. can get free mattresses. He really would like it. And he was frantic because he would see small homeless children or children living in cars. Or and I try, you know, how can you say to this 4-year-old who's doing the thing that you want him to do, you know, I'll get burned out.
Right.
But, you know, their instinct is certainly mm-hmm. a wonderful mm-hmm. instinct. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You don't want to say, well, there are homeless shelters.
But this concept of shared community is mm-hmm. is an interesting angle to look at it from to help prevent burnout or to deal with burnout if you're mm-hmm. not doing it, quote, alone or feeling isolated because of it, but if it's part of a communal practice.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Intriguing.
Right.
I think one of the things that happens in the church is that we treat people that are in the congregation that are known part of that community like we do our personal family and friends. That is, we're very friendly with each other. Mm-hmm. And then when the real stranger comes into that community, mm-hmm. which is much safer mm-hmm. to deal with somebody who may be weird but probably isn't, that the same group of people go out to lunch together mm-hmm. and really have an opportunity to invite the stranger mm-hmm. and probably don't.
Right. Well, we need to, I think there are lots of questions that will remain about this. But I think thinking of this not just as an individual good feeling, but as something that, that can be structured as part of our shared life has got to be part of the answer. The bookstore asks us to mention books that we're drawing on, and this is one that I have edited called Practicing Our Faith, which treats hospitality along with 11 other basic Christian practices which meet fundamental human needs, which is available in the bookstore. There are practices like honoring the body, testimony, Sabbath keeping, discernment, healing, and so on. And written by different authors. The one on hospitality is written by a Hispanic Sister of Mercy who takes off from the Las Posadas story and the experience of her community. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.